Succession number 21279, Reel 1.
Cyril Williams, Reel 1. So can you tell me where you were born?
I was born in Harrington, Cumberland.
Uh-huh. And what was your date of birth?
28/9/23.
And what did your father do?
He worked at the time Labour Exchange. He was a manager.
And did your mother work?
No.
No. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
One brother who was 14 months younger than me.
Uh-huh. Did he go in the services?
No, except at the end of the war. He, towards the end of the war, he became an engineer officer in the Merchant Navy.
Where did you go to school?
Many places. I started off... I went to two schools in Cumberland, and then the family moved into what we thought was the Deep South, but it was Manchester, 130 miles south. And I went to... Well, I finished my primary education there and then went to grammar school. And after being evacuated, that was the beginning of my war. I wasn't a little evacuee, quite a big evacuee. But in fact, we played against the second team, RAF team, rugby, from Squires Gate. They beat us dreadfully and could have got a higher score, you know, were they not gentlemen, really. Then moving back to Manchester after the period of evacuation, I briefly, well, I think it was about 6 months, worked in a laboratory. It was really filling in time because I wanted to get in the forces.
What age did you actually leave school?
17.
Right. Do you have any qualifications, any exams?
Well, just the school certificate in high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So what sort of a laboratory was it?
It was one belonging to an industrial firm. They dealt with... rubber sheeting, May Wests. In fact, I flew later to Arnhem and I was wearing a May West that was made by these people, so it was interesting.
Yeah. So you wanted to go in the forces, did you?
Yes, I did.
You did, right. So you were all ready to volunteer as soon as you...
Yes, in fact, I volunteered at 17. I wanted to be an RAF pilot because my father, starting off in the infantry in the First World War, he joined the Royal Flying Corps and became a pilot and was one of the first commercial pilots after the war for a brief period. But I was shocked and disappointed when they found that I had mild defective colour vision. This is where I hope I'm going to be allowed to quote figures. People always say, oh, colourblind. No, it wasn't colourblind. It was a mild colour defect, and about 8% of all males suffered from this. I can see that the bus is a red bus, if it is, and I can see that the grass is green, but... little blips of light. In fact, it was a technician or an RAF doctor. He said, what was that colour again? And I obviously got the wrong ones. And although I did the rest to qualify for aircrew, pilot or observer, that was it. They said I couldn't be aircrew, support aircrew or anything, air gunner, but I'm sure that I would be happy in the ground force. Well, that did not suit me at all. So I then waited the few months necessary and was called up and was sent to the 60th Training Regiment at Tidworth.
Do you remember the date you were called up?
I think it was either the 2nd of June or the 2nd of July. 1942.
Yeah. So it's the 60th?
Training Regiment, yes.
At Tidworth.
Mm-hmm.
So what were your feelings when you got your call-up papers then?
Well, it was going to be interesting and... although I wasn't going to be able to fly, that was an interesting prospect. Mm. I knew that I would learn to drive, and that suited me, and indeed the service experience showed that it was good. I got the shock that nearly every person got, being bawled about and doing unnecessary things, and I detested that part of it.
Right, we'll come on to that. Can I ask you, what did your parents think about you being called up, you know?
Well, my mother was apprehensive, I suppose most mothers would be. My father, he realised that, well, it was one of the things that... well, how a boy becomes a man. So that was it.
Yeah. So can you remember going down to Tidworth? You went on the train, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. First time down south, deep south?
Except for a day trip on the railway organised by my junior school to London, that was it.
Right. Yeah.
But remember, I'd been... eased into the south, as I thought, by going down to Manchester.
Right, yes. So wonderful, yeah. So what was the arrival at Tidworth like? Were they all waiting for you at the railway station? Or
there were trucks at the railway station, and of course we were all carrying little cases for our civilian gear to be sent back. And as soon as possible, we went to the quartermaster's place and we were sized up by the quartermaster and his staff. Oh, you'll be this size, and they pushed these things at us. Extraordinarily heavy army boots, as I thought, and I'd been wearing the usual civilian shoes. Not as light as they are nowadays, but it was a bit of a jolt. And, of course, getting into the army gear, smelling with, I suppose, disinfectant. And it was coarse serge. But it wasn't the clothing and the gear. It was the attitude. The NCOs, they... introduces not gently into army life, but get a move on there, you know, that sort of stuff.
How did you take to it straight away? Can you remember that first night in the barrack? What sort of a barrack was it?
It was an old dilapidated, dilapidated is wrong. It was very, very old. The barracks had been put up for the cavalry, Death and Glory Boys. The title makes me wince, actually. These are the people with the skull and crossbones on their cap badge. And some of the other cavalry regiments. And it was a great barrack room. About 30 people in it, I think. There was a bit of a smell of sweat. And... of course, most of us were missing privacy for the first time.
Right. That must have been quite difficult, really.
Well, a bit of a culture shock, and the business of learning to call, well, it wasn't a bathroom, but a place with wash basins and loos, the ablutions, and... a sergeant bawling, you'll get a bath, not an opportunity, you'll get a bath once a week. Make sure you bloody well use it, you know, and it is wince-making. And also, I was surprised when I went along to the ablutions once, a fellow, from his accent, was from the northeast. He was having a little weep. And he was no sort of crybaby, as I found out later. But on that particular occasion, he... I think it must have been very early on, because he received a letter from his mother. And reading the letter, and I can imagine now the sort of stuff in it, I hope they're treating you nicely, son, and I hope there are some nice boys with you. You know, that sort of thing. It was just too much. But he was quite a tough lad, actually, and that was the only bit of softness I ever recall of him.
So how did they start training you? Because they had these, you know, these raw recruits who knew nothing.
Well, this is it. And the first, it was 12 weeks of GMT, General Military Training, and that included a lot of square bashing, two purposes. One, to get us fit, because they got us up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we moved around quite briskly for the rest of the day, so that nobody grumbled when it was lights out at 10:15. But also, it was getting us used to the army machine, to stop any tendency to answer back or to query. Yes, this was a jolt, and... my father was justified in saying, you'll get a shock because you've been living softly.
So what were the NCOs like? Who did you have most contact with?
Well, my memory has never been good for names, but it's like the army number. I think few of us ever forget the names of the first NCOs we deal with. We had a Sergeant Messer, not inappropriate, the name, and his awkward corporal, Ricalton, I think his name was, I've just said you never forget, but anyway, Sergeant Messer, I never forget, and in fact, when he used to bawl a squad to a halt, and when he comes out with a rapid squad, protracted and much louder than I'm saying now, halt, we tended to go forward, and with our heavy boots and the metal studs and things, we tended to slither on the parade ground, and this gave him his opportunity to call us, as he must have done to many intakes before us, Messrs. Marionettes. So, yes, he was a fair man, with a vulgar turn of language. And, of course, instead of being a private, I think my mother was mildly happy that I was going to be a trooper. It sounded better rather than a private. But there is a saying, you know, swearing like a trooper. So I'm not entirely blaming the army for this, but... Harry Carlton was the corporal's name, but rough, but very good and very fair,
they
both
were
of them.
Fair,
yes.
They?
Mm.
So they got some respect, did they?
Yes. Mm. Yes. I think they soon earned it. They were going to put us through our paces, and well, that was the job, and I think they did it pretty well.
So what equipment did you get issued there? You got your uniform, you got a rifle, didn't you?
We didn't get a rifle right away, because the Armoured Corps personal weapon, at least it was in those far-off days, it was a revolver, because you can't take a rifle into a tank turret or into the driving position. So you have a revolver that's strapped...
So you issued that straight away, were you?
Not the revolver, but the harness for it. And, of course, the small pack and the big pack. Yes, it was interesting stuff. And when I saw the pistol harness, I thought, oh, you know, this is going to be interesting. And as a matter of fact, in spite of all that happened later in the war, I was an enthusiastic pistol shot, and it really started from Tidworth. But it was the square bashing, as mentioned, dashing about, special exercises, throwing telegraph poles about, not unaided.
Was that part of the PT?
Yes, right. It was.
So what did you do with the telegraph poles?
Well, I think there were three per, so it would be about 10 men to each one, and you were tossing them about, and then probably from five to five, there'd be five soldiers a few paces away, and the other five would chuck this thing at them, and then it would be thrown back. So it taught all sorts of skills and strengthened you, of course, doing that sort of thing.
You did PT every day, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Was that arduous? Or?
No, I'd... I was pretty athletic as a boy, and I enjoyed it. Some of them puffed and huffed, but I wasn't one of them. Yeah. Yes, I really enjoyed that part. Yeah. But after, or sometime maybe, it was during the 12 weeks GMT, I was introduced to the courses that we were going to take. There was driving. I'm not sure whether that was introduced first. And then there was radio. I wasn't very good at that because we had to learn Morse. That was still in use. And we had to get it to a certain standard in a certain limited time. And if you did pretty good, you got a badge, would you believe, and ninepence extra a day.
Did you get to that standard? Or?
Yes, I did. Yeah. But it wasn't easy for me. And I much preferred speaking just on the radio. And then there was... apart from the driving, and we started on, I think there'd probably be 1,300 hundredweight trucks, and then we had to pass through the wheel driving course before we were introduced to the trucks, not on tanks straight away, on Lloyd carriers. They were called slave carriers. It's interesting how every job and trade has its own jargon. And slave, we wondered why that odd name, silly name even. But this was a tracked vehicle, and it had a great battery of accumulators on the back. And these things were well named as slaves because starting any vehicle is a great drain on the battery. And to start a tank engine then is difficult. So you wouldn't have in 42 in the early 40s, well, there must be self-starters, but if you couldn't get the thing started, it was more than an inconvenience at times, I'm sure. So that when you have these Lloyd slave carriers, then the thing was just hooked up and you got a boost of the battery, the line of batteries.
So they were used to
start
boost
a tank.
The tanks, yeah.
To start them, so that it wouldn't drain the engine.
Right.
So that later on in the exercise, if the tank's engine was stalled by the rookie drivers, then there would be enough in the so that you touch the button and hopefully it would start again. You see.
Right. So in keeping to basic training for the minute, they taught you wireless op.
Yes.
And they taught you driving.
Mm-hmm.
What was the driving instruction like? Did you have a considerate gentleman sitting beside you explaining everything, or was it a bit more rough and ready?
Well, the wheeled training, I well remember that, because part way through we had to go in front of the Lieutenant Colonel commanding the thing, and I suppose it was an interim report from various instructors. And the only one I remember is the driving, the report on the driving. And I remember the colonel saying, "Ah, Williams, your driving instructor said you seem to be slightly nervous." I said, "Sir, I found the driving instructor to be rather nervous." But that was it.
Who was the lieutenant colonel? Do you remember?
I don't. No, that's shameful, because we were told that, colonel in charge was, and the adjutant was, and, second in command, and we were supposed never to forget. I think even during my limited time then, I didn't register many of them. So
you probably didn't have much contact with them, did you, really?
No. No, the only officer that I can remember was Second Lieutenant Green, and I'm proud of myself that I've managed even to think of one. I can't think of many good friends who joined with me.
Probably remember the faces, but not the names, yeah. So, on the basic training, what sort of weapons training did you do? Did you do all the grenades? And
yes, but we started on the rifle before we did pistol training. That is, even though I said earlier that the personal weapon was a revolver, I think that the army believed that the rifle, every soldier should know something about that. And then there was a light machine gun training, Bren. I enjoyed that. But I remember that we moved on. I must digress for a minute. We weren't in Tidworth for very long when we had to move out and travel north. No hardship for me, but we were going to Catterick. This was
was this still with the 16th training?
Yes. And we went there by rail. And we went to Waitwith Lines, so Corporal Ricalton, he taught us how to strip and reassemble the Bren, and it's very effective training. Eyes shut so that you learn to do it in the dark. And this tough Corporal Ricalton, he said, when you put the breech block back, remember dive bomber. And he lifted these two bits from the breech block and put them down. He said, dive bomber, like that. And it looked, in a way, an overgrown boy playing with toys. So I couldn't help but beam. Just at that moment, Corporal Ricalton opened his eyes and saw me grinning. So he then said, Williams, put this blankety-blank thing together. And he said, when I'd done it correctly, he said, I want you to pick it up, and the Bren gun, 26 and something pounds. He said, I want you to run round this field. It was a sloping field by the side of our barrack room. And he timed it absolutely to a turn. I was just about to collapse when he called me to a halt. And he said, when I got my breath back and could speak to him, he said, Williams, if I ever catch you laughing at me again, I'll have you running round until then. He described some dreadful fate that would befall me. And I earned that. But later on, when I was dodging a parade, a route march, which was going to last for more than half a day, I nipped into the ablutions. This was in the Catterick camp. And I was shattered when I went in there to see Corporal Ricalton, who must have been excused from that thing, with a towel round his neck. And he said, "What, there's something, how are you doing here, Williams?" So I said some excuse like nipping in. We didn't use the term loo in those days. But he said, "Anyway, wait until the parades got away." And he said, "Out of barracks or in the barracks, I don't want you wandering about anywhere." So he was a fair man, a gentle giant. Anyway, I digress.
So what about the... you did route marches then?
Oh, yes, we did a lot.
Some of them,
oh, yes, that's the only one that I dodged. And it was really a bit of bravado, because some of them were saying, I was in the middle rank there, as we marked time, a big column loses its, well, they lose the proper momentum and get out of step, so they get called to order, and you're bringing your knees up and down, and then you move off again, hopefully in proper order. And I suppose this must have been, well, about the end of the 12 weeks training, because it was good. And a lot of the route marches, they were enjoyable. And they were shocking as well. I remember Lieutenant Green saying, as we came to a river in Yorkshire, "Right, into there, and I want to see you at the other side." And there were mock comments like, "But sir, we're going to get wet." But anyway, we're to flounder through. And this was with rifles, so we were told to lift them, you know, out of the way and not to get them wet. And on the other side, we trudged away. We were cautioned not to take our boots off, because our feet would swell and we wouldn't get the boots back on again. But then a truck, or trucks rather, because it was the whole training regiment, I suppose about 600 men, we were, they brought our greatcoats, and we already had the gas capes on the march, and then we'd to settle down in our wet things for the night. So it was being taught that there'd be certain inconveniences in military life, but it would be a good thing if we got used to it early on. So,
did you do assault courses?
No, not really. I met that later on, but no.
Right. And did you take place in any schemes or manoeuvres or anything while you were doing basic?
No, it didn't take place. There were small schemes. There were lots of training exercises. The we went into tanks, and at that time it was North Yorkshire. I didn't get to tanks or even driving when we were down in Tidworth. But I enjoyed the driving, and that's, or the going out in tanks. For me, it was not mainly driving, which I'd have enjoyed better, but being in the turret, doing, I'd forgotten, the other important course, of course, was gunnery. Because every tank soldier then, and probably now, is taught the three main trades, the driving, the operating, and the gunnery.
So what sort of gunnery did you do on your basic training?
Well, there was the small arms, the rifle, and then we were introduced to the revolver, which I mentioned earlier. I found quite enjoyable, but it's nowhere near as easy as cowboy films make it out. Nobody thought of throwing a coin up and drilling a neat hole through it. Yes, it was very enjoyable. And then using an indoor apparatus, it was like the mock-up of a gun turret. And what was really an air gun was inside this instead of a two-pounder gun. And there was like a mock-up of a desert scene, great big sand table. And it was called a riper, rolling young.
There for the next reel. Cyril Williams, end of reel one. Cyril Williams, reel two.